Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather round the radio. It's time for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, as we welcome the month of June 2014. Hope that your spring has been a good one and we're heading toward the summer. I'm Michael Harrison. It's my privilege serving as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show with lots of good people around the table. And the host of the program is its founder and guiding light, Carol Marks. Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues. And she is indeed a champion in the battle against ageism. She'll be talking with Thomas Goetz today. He's a noted science journalist and healthcare innovator and former executive editor of the magazine Wired. He will talk about his new book titled The Remedy, Robert Koch, author Conan Doyle, and The Quest to Cure Tuberculosis, published by Gotham Books. But before we get into that, let's listen to Carol Marks interviewing Dr. Kelly Turner. She's a PhD. She's a researcher, a lecturer, and a counselor in integrative oncology. And she's going to talk to Carol about her new book titled Radical Remission, Surviving Cancer Against All Odds, published by Harper One.
What is the difference between radical remission and what it's often been called, spontaneous remission from cancer?
There is no difference. I just don't like the word spontaneous because, like I said, I'm one of the only people who's really researched this topic. And doctors 100 years ago just called it spontaneous remission because they couldn't explain why this cancer was going away. But if you look at the word spontaneous, it means that something happened by chance or by luck, or it just happened on its own. Well, when I actually started researching this phenomenon and talking to these people, I figured out that they worked very hard to go into remission, often over a course of years. And so the word spontaneous doesn't really describe the majority of these people, and actually many of them take a lot of offense to that word. They said, this wasn't spontaneous, I worked my tail off. So I've come up with this other term, radical remission, because they made radical changes in their lives to have these radical results.
So very good explanation.
It's a better way to describe it. And actually, while we're talking about it, I should probably define what we're talking about. So spontaneous or radical remission is when cancer goes away without conventional medicine. That's either from the beginning, so someone might choose not to use conventional medicine because of their own beliefs, or what's more frequent is people try conventional medicine to its fullest, but it just isn't working, and then they have to try other things, and then they can get, then a few of those people do turn it around. Those are the people that I study.
Now, I want to ask you before we continue how you feel about the conventional cancer treatments, surgery, chemotherapy, and radiation.
I believe in them fully and wholeheartedly. I'm so glad you asked that, Carol. I'm always quick to say that I am in no way against Western medicine. I'm a big believer in it. It's just that there's this control group. There's this unique group of people out there who are healing without it, and no one's looking at them. And we have a lot to learn as scientists from studying the anomalies that are in our world. So some of science's greatest discoveries have come from looking at things that don't behave the way we think they should. And so that's why I'm looking at these cases, because they're really strange. They're not behaving the way we would expect them to. And therefore, as a scientist, they are worth studying simply because of that fact. But just because I study these people doesn't mean that I think we should all go instantly copycat what they're doing. I think instead what we should do is study them and learn from them.
Excellent. You did a lot of research to document the cases of people who recovered from cancer against all odds. So how long did it take you to do the research? How many people did you interview? Countries you visited? Were there a lot of them? And what about the holistic healers? How many people did you talk to?
Absolutely. Well, I've been studying radical remission now for more than 10 years, and I've analyzed over 1,000 of these cases. I've done over 200 direct interviews, like in-depth interviews with radical remission survivors, and then, of course, I've analyzed other cases that have been published. During that 10 years, I did take a year of my dissertation research time to travel around the world to 10 different countries, and that was not only to find radical remission survivors, which I did, which was fantastic, but also to find and interview alternative cancer healers from around the world. Because many of the people that I was studying, I quickly found out that they were literally traveling to the ends of the earth. to try to get well, and finding doctors and healers in other countries who were willing to do something else besides just hospice, which many of the people I studied, you know, that was what they were, that was their only choice, because they had tried everything else. And so I did travel to 10 different countries to find survivors and healers who were treating cancer in unique ways. In terms of the healers, I've interviewed now over 75 of them directly.
Now, I understand that most of your case studies revolved around people with stage 4 cancers who either declined conventional treatment or were given treatment that didn't work. But didn't the Radical Remission Project, didn't that also involve people that didn't have cancer that had other serious problems?
Well, we haven't, the Radical Remission Project, which is at radicalremission.com, is my ongoing research, and we are in the process of opening that up to other radical remissions from other illnesses, such as HIV/AIDS or chronic conditions, anyone who's had sort of a miraculous turnaround or recovery. We are about to open it up to collect cases from other illnesses. We haven't set that up quite yet on the website, but it's certainly where my research is going.
Now, how common is radical remission, and do you think it's vastly underreported?
It is, I'll answer your second question first, because it is vastly underreported, which makes it very hard for me to answer your first question, which is how often does it happen? These cases are not tracked in the National Cancer Registry, which is how all of our cancer statistics are created from this National Cancer Registry. So we really don't know how often these cases are happening. They're not reported by their doctors. Right now in the medical journals, it's estimated that one out of every 60,000 cancer cases is a radical remission. I think it's actually much higher. Again, I'm one of the only people who's been studying this, and I've been doing that for 10 years. In my estimation, for every case that's published, I think that there are 100 more that go unpublished. And just to prove that fact, in my research, I have always looked first for unpublished cases, because I can always go back to those 1,000 that are published and track those people down and interview them. And I have not had any trouble finding unpublished cases. All of the cases that I've studied in the past 10 years are in the direct interviews are unpublished cases. So it just shows you that these cases really aren't being reported or tracked anywhere.
Well, I think one of the most groundbreaking things that you did in your interviews with patients that experienced radical remission was to ask them something that no one had ever asked before. What did they do to get well? And you came up with 9 of the most common factors that they thought helped them, and how many of them were physical and how many of them were emotional?
Right. Well, I think it's important to say that in my interviews, there were over 75 different factors that came up of why these people believe they healed. But when I actually tabulated the frequency of how often these factors were happening across all of my cases, there were 9 that almost every person did. So that's why there are a top 9, or the 9 key healing factors. And of those 9, only 2 were physical. And that was really surprising to me. Now, maybe it's not surprising to other people, because physically they had done almost as much as they could, you know, in terms of what their doctors had offered them. So they're at a point where they need to try other things. And if they've tried physical things to their limit, maybe it does make sense then that they try more emotional and spiritual things. But yes, only 2 of the 9 key factors in my book and my research are physical, and that's changing your diet radically and also taking herbs and supplements.
And I always knew that there needed to be a strong and integrated mind-body connection that we have if we want to be healthy. But I was totally blown away by the study with patients who had cancer and had never meditated. So when it came to their cancers, what were the results of 6 weeks of meditation? Because I thought they were amazing.
Yeah, it's a wonderful new study that came out. Very recent, so it hasn't quite trickled down to the general public, so I'm happy to have featured it in my book, because what this groundbreaking study showed us on meditators is it was looking at their genes. So many of us think that our genes are our destiny, right? What we inherit, we are stuck with. And actually, science for the past 30 years has learned that that's not quite true. There's a field of scientific research called epigenetics, which means beyond the genes. And that is looking at what factors in our behavior impact which genes are turned on or turned off. So, yes, you can inherit a bad gene from your parents. You can inherit a flawed gene from your parents. But it's only going to cause problems for you if it is turned on, like a light switch. So if it is expressed or turned on, it will cause you problems. If it's turned off, you'll have it in your DNA, but it won't cause you any trouble. And what this meditation study showed was they took people who had never meditated before. These were beginners. They taught them how to meditate, and they looked at their genetic expression, so which genes were turned on and turned off, before and after the 6 weeks of instruction. And amazingly, only after 6 weeks, these beginner meditators were able to turn off cancer genes and turn on health-promoting genes. So we have a lot more control over our genes and over our health than we ever believed possible before. And a lot of that control can come from what we do with our habitual thoughts and feelings. Because our thoughts and feelings actually instantly send a chemical flood into our bloodstream as soon as we have that thought or feeling. So if we have chronic stress, we're sending cortisol and adrenaline and other immune-suppressing chemicals into our bloodstream. Whereas if we're meditating and getting into a state of deep breathing and peace and non-stress, then we're sending a whole host of other healing hormones into our bloodstream, which actually boosts the immune system. So it's very connected and very...
And would you say, Dr. Turner, that the mind leads the body when it comes to healing? It's not the other way around.
Well, I wouldn't say that because I'm just a researcher, and I'm always quick to say that I'm not a medical doctor, and I'm not here to prescribe anything or give advice. But I will say that everyone that I've studied, all the radical remission survivors, have said that. They do say that. They say the mind leads the body. And that's their opinion, but that is the belief that has helped them, in their opinion, get well. So I think it is something worth listening to and learning from and studying further, this idea that the mind does sort of tell the body chemically what to do. Now, we know that that's true from a scientific standpoint. We know that when you have thoughts and emotions, chemicals are instantly released. There are some cases where the body can tell the mind what to do, right? So when the body's hungry, it makes you think, oh, I need to go find food. So there is sort of a two-way street here, but I think medicine hasn't focused on that first point, which is that, you know, the mind really sends very clear signals to every cell in your body.
That's Kelly Turner, PhD, in conversation with Carol Marks. Her book is titled Radical Remission, Surviving Cancer Against All Odds, published by Harper One. For more information, go to radicalremission.com. Carol Marks returns in conversation with the former executive editor of Wired magazine. He's going to talk about a new book he's written. That's next when A Touch of Gray continues.
Our wildlife and natural landscapes are disappearing at an alarming rate. Fortunately, as a concerned landowner, you can help prevent some of this loss. Protect your land for the future and prohibit hunting and trapping of the animals who call it home by working with the Wildlife Land Trust. Call 1-800-729-SAVE. That's 1-800-729-SAVE, the Wildlife Land Trust. Or go to wildlifelandtrust.org. The Wildlife Land Trust, saving lives by saving land.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here again is our host, Carol Marks, in conversation now with Thomas Goetz. He's a noted science journalist and a healthcare innovator, former executive editor of Wired, and he's going to talk to Carol about his new book titled The Remedy, Robert Koch, author Conan Doyle, and The Quest to Cure Tuberculosis, published by Gotham Books.
Now, can you give us a little background on how you came up with a unique idea for the book, The Remedy, because it's fascinating. Do you think that we've forgotten the fact that in the 19th century, TB was the most feared disease on Earth?
Yeah, exactly. It was the TB, or consumption, as it was called then, was the largest killer. At least a quarter of Americans died of TB. A quarter of Europeans died of TB. And it was something that was even more horrible because nobody knew what caused it. People thought it was hereditary. People thought it was caused by cancer or something like that. But nobody knew that it was germs. So the story is about this scientist, Robert Koch, who comes along and actually does the hard work and the diligent experimentation and identifies a bacteria that causes TB. And that was a huge breakthrough. It was a triumph of science time when there really wasn't that much that science could do to help people. So it was an amazing discovery. And then the kind of tale begins when Koch takes the next step a few years later, and he says that he has a remedy. And that really gets people excited, and the question becomes, is the remedy actually a remedy? Will it work?
And it's just, you know, a real thriller, because the book really charts a race for a TB cure, and you write that this whole search for the cure was driven by what you call the pursuit of scientific glory. So it asks the question then, are big egos necessary to make progress in science and medicine, because that's not always a good thing?
That's a great question. I think that it's not necessary, but it certainly is a common characteristic. So one of the things that drove Koch in his quest to identify disease and then maybe to even cure it was ambition. He was a hugely ambitious person. He started his career as an anonymous country doctor, and just through sheer grit and determination, created a scientific process that was able to prove that germs cause disease in an era that when nobody believed that germs caused disease. So that took incredible ambition, and then it took great ego and kind of competitive spirit with Louis Pasteur, who was the great kind of giant of medical science in Europe at the time. And Koch was in a fierce competition with Pasteur, and each of them had these labs. Koch's in Berlin, Pasteur's in Paris, and they were fueled by national rivalries between France and Germany. This is right after the Franco-Prussian War, so there was a huge amount of kind of human ego and all these things that we think of as not our best traits that were driving forward this great altruistic scientific discovery. So the two definitely kind of go together and are probably at work more often than we think.
Now, the remarkable thing that Dr. Koch did was, you know, he really pushed away the last doubts about the germ theory of disease, and he changed the perception of TB and consumption as something that could be understood. So I think that was really important. So where does Arthur Conan Doyle come into the story?
Right. So Conan Doyle, like Koch, was started his career just as an kind of anonymous rural doctor. He was in a little suburb of England called Southsea, and he wanted to be more than just a little country doctor, and so he started writing stories and started writing essays for the popular press. And Conan Doyle was a great admirer of this new scientific medicine, what was called at the time scientific medicine, as if there's any other kind. But at the time, it was this great kind of new wave of innovation and discovery led by people like Robert Koch and Louis Pasteur. And as a practitioner, Arthur Conan Doyle was a big believer and advocate of this new scientific medicine. When Robert Koch announced that he had a remedy or a cure, it set the world on fire, and Conan Doyle was inspired to actually leave his practice, dash to Berlin, and actually try to investigate whether Koch's remedy really was going to work or not. And that became this kind of pivotal moment in both of their lives. And Arthur Conan Doyle ended up in many ways dedicating himself after that trip to Sherlock Holmes and the notion of a scientific detective.
So he went to investigate, and he found out that the cure was really not workable at all. But when he came back to England after visiting Berlin, he came back a changed man with a lot more confidence. Why do you think that was?
Well, I think so. Conan Doyle at the time had written a couple Sherlock Holmes stories, and they were the longer Sherlock Holmes novels. The challenge was that they weren't that well received, and so what he was trying to figure out was, should he be a physician or should he be a writer? And when he went to Berlin and he went on this investigation and was playing detective, he was so inspired by the kind of effort and so inspired by the process that on the way back to England, he decided that he was going to make the leap and actually give up his presidency, and he was actually going to dedicate himself to literature and to Sherlock Holmes. And it was a big moment for him.
And that was a really, you know, a difficult decision, and the world is happy that he decided that. Now, do you think that Sherlock Holmes was as much a scientist as a detective because Arthur Conan Doyle really believed that the world of medicine and microbes were closely aligned to the world of law and order, which is quite a thought.
Yeah. So the real, you know, one of the things that is I tried to get across in the book, and the book has this great medical mystery, but it also, what I try to do is to use that story to tell the greater story about kind of how much we appreciate or how much we should appreciate medicine and how much we should appreciate science and how hard that process is. Because as you say, you know, there was not a lot of evidence that science could do much for us in our daily lives. Science was something, you know, there was astronomy and a sense of kind of the stars, and Darwin had just kind of released his theory of evolution, but it really wasn't changing our day-to-day lives. And that started to happen with this new advent of medicine, and there was Joseph Lister in England who was pioneering antiseptic surgery, so that if you got a surgery, you could actually survive and not get an infection afterwards because they would clean the instruments, which was a huge breakthrough. And then in criminology, just investigating crimes in a scientific way was another kind of very radical notion. So these were all ways of bringing science to people in their real lives, and it was a huge social shift.
Thomas Goetz, in conversation with Carol Marx. His book is titled The Remedy, Robert Koch, Arthur Conan Doyle, and The Quest to Cure Tuberculosis, published by Gotham Books. I'm Michael Harrison. You're listening to A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. We'll continue with Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving. According to the U.S. Department of Energy, speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray.
check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation's struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. We come to that point in the program where we're joined by our senior correspondent, Kevin Casey, who also has the title Vice President and Executive Editor of the trade magazines, Talkers and Radio Info. Talkers serves the talk radio business at talkers.com. Radio Info serves the music radio business at radioinfo.com. And, well, here we are, Kevin, the first week after Memorial Day weekend. It isn't officially summer yet, but it's sort of unofficially summer with that holiday.
Right.
We're shooting toward the 4th of July weekend as the next big holiday. And we will be inundated with advertisements and buzz about the summer movies, the summer blockbusters.
Yeah.
And I'm debating whether or not I want to see Godzilla.
The Godzilla. I was shocked that they made this again. And obviously, as you know, Godzilla, if you've seen the trailers, he is bigger than ever.
And did you catch the scene where he's growling and it goes on forever? Here, the picture, the head over.
Yeah, is he trying to talk? By the way, that's very good.
Yeah, thank you.
Is he trying to talk to us, or is he just angry? Why do monsters always do that?
I don't know. I it all goes back to King Kong.
Yes.
That King Kong's roar was designed by having a lion recorded and going backwards. And then they had trucks, and they had trains, and they had all kinds of things that they put in the mix for King Kong's roar, which was, in its time, very, very otherworldly.
Wow.
If you go back and watch that, but this Godzilla looks like it's a you know, crazy, big, mean monster. However, that being said, once you get over the initial buzz of the special effects, these movies become boring.
Yeah, and I haven't seen it, obviously.
I haven't either.
Yeah, I'm sure that it's wonderful. I really do have a hard time suspending disbelief about the laws of physics being broken consistently. First of all, as you probably are aware, Godzilla, that creature could not exist in Earth's gravity. There's no known structure which could support, you know, that body that size in this gravity. So you couldn't get that big and function on this planet.
You'd have arthritis of the knees.
your bones would snap if you were that
ankles
big.
Would be killing you. Your knees would be aching.
Yes.
You'd be a mess.
You'd have gout, too.
Right.
It'd be terrible.
Well, the physics. You know, what's really funny is you're talking about something very interesting, and that is the difference between sci-fi that's fantasy and sci-fi that's really science faction.
Right.
And the best science fiction is the kind that's based upon the laws of physics. In other words, like, that it could possibly be real.
Well, right, but that's boring because you can't have guys getting, you know, guys within 10 feet of an exploding bomb who just get knocked away and then get up. Like, oh, boy, that was tough.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. Your car is turning in the air.
Do you remember in the old days, we only have about 30 seconds, but remember in the old days when they showed fist fights, guys would get punched, they'd be knocked out. They'd be laying on the street for 20 minutes, then they'd get up and be fine and go about their business.
Yeah, no blood, no cuts, I know.
Right. If you're knocked unconscious, your day is ruined. You're not going to get back up and join the fray. But, hey, whatever. Listen, we'll talk about Godzilla after we see it on Showtime.
Okay.
Thank you, Kevin Casey. Kevin Casey is the Vice President and Executive Editor of Talkers at Talkers.com, Radio Info at RadioInfo.com. A little peek at the media and sometimes beyond the media. I'm Michael Harrison. You're listening to A Touch of Gray. And we're going to be joined by Steve Wiseman the rest of the way when A Touch of Gray continues.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty.
A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined the rest of the way by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman, in conversation now with Donna Skeels-Sagan. She's a certified financial planner and the author of The Joy of Financial Security, The Art and Science of Becoming Happier, Managing Your Money Wisely, and Creating a Secure Financial Future, published by Sage Future Press.
First of all, Donna, welcome to the show. I'm intrigued by the title. I know we had Joy of Cooking. I know we had Joy of Sex. I'm hoping we even get Joy of Sex While Cooking. But why the Joy of Financial Security?
You know, Steve, first of all, thanks very much for having me on your show. I went through a lot of titles. One of the titles I really contemplated was Happiness Doesn't Grow on Trees, because we all know the saying, money doesn't grow on trees. But I love The Joy of Financial Security and talked about the value we might get from the joy of sex and the joy of cooking, and hopefully the joy of financial security gives even more value.
You know, and it certainly is right up there. One of the things, and this is unusual in your book, which I found very, very interesting and intriguing, and it reminded me of so many of my clients, your subtitle touches on the science of managing your money wisely. And in the book, you go over how different parts of our brain affect our financial decisions, and some people may have one side develop more than another. Could you go into that a little bit?
Sure, I'd love to. The field of neuroscience is giving us wonderful research, and there's two parts of the brain that often are in conflict with each other, and they impact the way we make financial decisions. So one of them is the amygdala, which is in the brain stem, the core of the brain, and that's where our emotions arise. So things such as fear and greed and craving money or craving food or sex or anything of that sort tends to arise from the amygdala. And then we have the prefrontal cortex, which is a result of evolution, and humans have a much larger prefrontal cortex than animals, and that's where logic prevails. And that's where rational thinking and having a plan and looking at the pros and cons of a financial decision come into play. And so both of those parts of our brain are interacting, and we need to really kind of become aware of which one is dominant. And if we tend to be impulsive, we know the amygdala is becoming dominant, and we need to take time and make sure our prefrontal cortex adds the logic so we make a smart decision.
You know, it's interesting, and I don't know if you've seen the some of the research, but I've found that I think women make better investment decisions because men seem to be a bit more impulsive. The flip side of that is, and I see it in my own family, my wife will overanalyze to a place of paralyze, that she just can't make a decision until everything is there. Have you seen that in regard to differences between men and women?
Well, I've definitely seen the first part of your comment where there is a tendency, and it's definitely a generality, but men tend to kind of want to shoot for the stars. You know, they want to win big, they're more competitive, and I think women are more contemplative. And so maybe that does lead right into your description of your wife, where if a woman is more contemplative, she really does want to analyze the decision and make sure it's a smart decision. So I do think men and women, we think differently, our brains are wired differently, and one is not necessarily better than the other, but they're just different.
Yeah. You know, one of the there's so many parts I liked about your book, but one in particular had to do with, frankly, Henry David Thoreau would be very proud of you. Simplify, simplify, simplify was his motto. And the fact is that a lot of very intelligent people just, they don't do anything because they find it overwhelming dealing with financial decisions. So why do you think it's important to simplify your life?
Well, I think it's huge. It actually gives us more energy for other things. There's so many different ways to simplify. I have found a lot of the people who come to me over the years, if they're avid savers, they tend to have a lot of different accounts scattered around among different brokerage firms, different banks, and simplifying that and consolidating it so that it's easier for them to manage going forward is one of the first things I do. In my own personal life, I am on a mission this summer to simplify my life in terms of purging, getting rid of a lot of the extra stuff in my house, in my office, and that just feels great, and it takes a real deliberate effort, but it feels wonderful. So, you know, simplifying our personal lives, simplifying our to-do lists, not having as many commitments, and certainly simplifying our finances, I think just makes it easier to manage, and then you can actually see the improvement in your net worth from year to year.
You know, you're a financial advisor. Your book is good whether you're going to work with a financial advisor or work on your own, because even if you're working with a financial advisor, you want to be educated to work with that person. But when and who should use a financial advisor, and when and who should go it alone for the most part?
That's a great question. And I do agree that a lot of people do not need a financial advisor, and financial advisors often are quite expensive. I think if somebody is very comfortable on the Internet and they know that they will actually implement the decisions they make, so someone can actually, I always recommend going to the Vanguard website, because there's a huge amount of free information on that website. If somebody wants to educate themselves and feel like they're on top of their finances, I think that's great. On the other hand, if they know they're not going to implement it because they are feeling not enough confidence, that kind of thing, then a financial advisor can come in handy. And luckily, there are some financial advisors now who will work on an hourly basis, and I think that's a great option, too, where you can take your list of questions and kind of do an annual checkup or a review. And then there's people like me, you know, I work on an annual retainer, but I'm not accepting any new clients. My firm is completely at capacity. And we give a huge amount of service, but it is expensive. And so, you know, depending on where a person is, they can pick and choose what service is best for them, or doing it alone.
You know, I'm a big sports fan, and I often think of the financial advisors as the quarterbacks of the team, because there is more to dealing in your financial life and your financial security than just investments. And to me, the financial planner is really the person best suited to kind of oversee all of those. But what are some of the other elements of financial security in addition to your investment strategies?
Well, certainly retirement planning is key, and updating the retirement projections every year, because life happens and things change, and we want to stay on top of those projections, is really important. Also in terms of giving people the confidence to know they're on track for retirement, they're doing the right thing, they're saving enough, those kinds of things. But then I also interact very closely with my clients' accountants and with their estate attorneys. And so you're right, I do feel often like the quarterback on the team, making sure that everything in the client's financial life and in their goals, it all needs to work together. So I often think that the other elements, the retirement planning, the insurance review, the estate planning, the tax planning, those actually bring more value than the investment planning, but it all needs to work together.
One of the things I liked in your book, I always like it when I agree with someone, you're a big fan, as I am, of the Roth IRA, and please explain that.
Well, the Roth IRA, in my opinion, is the best tool we've been given in the past 20 years. So it's a wonderful long-term tool because it will be tax-free forever. Now, I guess Congress could change that, but there's really not any rumblings at this point, and so I'm assuming that they will be tax-free forever, or if it changes, everybody will be grandfathered who already has that Roth. So you can build a Roth for 2014, and people under age 50 can put in $5,500, and those over 50 and over can put in $6,500. And you can also convert a traditional IRA to a Roth, and when you do that, it does trigger the taxes in the year of the conversion. But then you know you've gotten that money into an investment account that is forever tax-free, and so the power of it is to let it grow and grow and grow and compound tax-free, and when you take it out, there are no taxes. So it is a very powerful investing tool.
Donna Skeel-Sagan, in conversation with our senior correspondent Steve Wiseman. Her book is titled The Joy of Financial Security, The Art and Science of Becoming Happier, Managing Your Money Wisely, and Creating a Secure Financial Future, published by Sage Future Press. Steve Wiseman returns in just a moment with information about the AOL hacking. when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. We come to the final segment of this hour of our broadcast, and we're joined again by attorney Steve Wiseman, a member of our cast of characters, and certainly a prolific writer. He's written The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall, among a number of good books. He has a website that is appropriately titled scamicide.com. And Steve is here to tell us a little bit about the hacking of AOL. Steve?
Thank you, Michael. You know, more than 2.5 million people in America use America Online for email. A lot of people think, well, we're a little behind the times with it. But I'll tell you, frankly, one of the reasons that I do use AOL for email is because, unlike, say, Google for Gmail, there's no monitoring of your email. With Google, they're reading it in the sense of picking out words, and you may get advertising, but I just prefer the privacy. But anyway, just yesterday, AOL issued a statement confirming what many of us had already known, which is that AOL had been hacked, and many AOL email account users had their email accounts taken over in a botnet of zombie computers. These are where the hackers take over control of your computer, and they use it to use your email account to send emails to people in your address book. Now, sometimes it's just harmless spam, but other times it's harmful malware that can result in the people receiving that email that appears to be from you having their identity stolen when they click on the links in the emails and download this keystroke logging malware that steals all the information in their computers and files. So what you want to do is, first of all, find out if you're an AOL user. Go to your send file. See if your account is one of those affected, if people are receiving emails from you that you didn't send. If it does show that, you've been hacked. And, you know, never click on an email. This is for all of us. Even if it appears to be from someone you trust, unless you've confirmed that the email is legitimate and the link is legitimate. Identity thieves rely on us trusting emails that appear to come from people we know. Clicking on those links that may download malware, like those keystroke logging malware programs that make us victims of identity theft. Now, if you have been a victim of the hacking, AOL is advising you to change your password, but that's definitely not enough to make you safe. So here's a list of the other things that you should do as well. Yes, change your password on the email account. If you use the same password for other accounts, change that as well. Change your security question. I often suggest that people use a nonsensical security question because the information to your question could be guessed or gathered online. So you may want to do something like, what's your favorite color, with the answer being 7. Report the hacking to your email provider. Contact the people on your email list. Let them know you've been hacked. Scan your computer thoroughly with an up-to-date antivirus and anti-malware program. And then review the settings on your email, particularly to make sure that it's not being forwarded somewhere else. You do these things, it's the best you can do.
That's Steve Wiseman talking about the hacking of AOL, America Online. How many remember that? All right, as I mentioned earlier, if you want to know more about fraud and scams and all the things that Steve Wiseman knows very much about, read the book, The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall by Steve Wiseman. Also visit the website, scamaside.com. Thank you, Steve. And thank you, Beverly Santinello, on the front line, our producer, putting it all together, producing our program. Thank you, of course, to Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine, and a very big thanks to Carol Marks, the host and founder of the program. I'm Michael Harrison, who plays the role of anchor here and is happy to be here, inviting you to join us next weekend for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.